I'm recording this Friday afternoon, cruising along in the Health Ranger store transport truck. We're moving pallets from one location to another for manufacturing of the Ranger buckets that we're going to release about October 10th or 11th. And I'm looking at the warehouse and all these pallets of food and pallet racks and everything. And I'm thinking to myself, or at least asking the question, how long or for how long is any of this going to continue to function? You know, how much longer do we have fertilizer to grow food? How much longer do we have transport systems that are functioning, or even fuel or the engine oil issue, which still hasn't gone away? It's just been kind of delayed a little bit. How much longer do we have a banking system that functions where you can pay people, where you can actually have transactions? And I've told this to the people that work for me and even some of the low-level employees, just kind of labor workers. I've said, you know, everybody, get prepared. Everybody have a buffer of money, a buffer of food, have a way to live without electricity for some period of time if that's necessary, because the globalists have found the weak point of human civilization. And that weak point is food. And I think that the globalists actually, they realized their mistake with the vaccine genocide was assuming that they could force everybody to take it. I think they were shocked by the level of resistance, both on the legal side, thanks to attorneys like Thomas Renz, but also just on the personal side, people just saying no. Nurses and United States Air Force, active duty personnel, and, you know, Navy SEALs, and just wherever, police officers, people just saying, no, I'm not going to take your experimental jab. And I think they really thought they could get close to 100% compliance, and they didn't. They didn't get anything near that, except in a few countries. I mean, much higher compliance in, let's say, European countries overall and Canada than in the United States. And certainly in the red states, there was even lower compliance, you know, even among Christians, for example, much lower compliance. So I think the globalists have added this new layer of a global famine scenario just to try to shut down this weak point of human civilization, because everybody has to eat, even the unvaccinated. You know, that's the big realization. You can say no to vaccines. You can't say no to food. You're going to have to eat sooner or later. Everybody's going to have to eat. And very few people grow all their own food. I know that a lot of people grow a little bit of food, or maybe not even a lot of people. Some people grow some food. Like I do, I grow some food. I can't live off the food I'm growing. And most people can't, very few. So everybody's got to eat. Well, the food supply is centrally controlled. And then with a little bit of sabotage, such as, you know, arson and food plants exploding, being burned down, all these things that you've seen. And then, you know, hurricanes hitting the fertilizer phosphate mining operation in Central Florida. Oh, blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline, shutting off natural gas that makes nitrogen-based fertilizers, on and on, having the railroads stop carrying CF Industries fertilizer, right? We can't carry fertilizer anymore, sorry. Kind of an amazing dark synergy of events, isn't it, to just attack the food supply? Oh, yeah, and droughts in the western half of the United States, and then floods in some areas. This is the weak point. Everybody has to eat. And so famine is their weapon. That's the tool they've decided to really rely on to achieve global genocide. Now, along with famine, you have war. And I just recently interviewed Michael Yon, by the way, as I was hosting the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show just earlier today. This is Friday, September 30th, when I'm recording this. And the producers there invited me to come on a host. So I invited Michael Yon, because he and I had been having a lot of conversations about exactly this topic: war, pandemics, famine, and then mass human migration. So I had him on to talk about this. Now, he and I didn't say anything that you don't already know, you listening to this, because you're, you know, way ahead of the curve. But that was the first time we had that conversation on InfoWars, which is broadcast on, you know, 150 or more radio stations across the country. So the point is, a lot of people heard that for the first time, realizing how vulnerable we are to the shutdowns that are taking place, especially with ammonia, urea, fertilizer, things like that. But war is also well, the risk of war is greatly expanding. So in the last day or so, Vladimir Putin, he gave quite a fiery speech. And Vladimir Putin said that, hey, these four territories that voted to join Russia, and now I know Western countries are going to say, well, it wasn't a real vote. Yeah, as if you know, the Western countries don't themselves rig all their own elections. But anyway, Russia says these people voted to join Russia, and it's the four regions, you know, the Luhansk, Donetsk, Kharkiv, and Zaporizhia. I don't know. I'm sorry. I always have trouble pronouncing these. Anyway, those four regions, Russia now says that's permanently part of Mother Russia, basically, and we're going to defend it with everything, implying that that also means nuclear weapons. And then Putin went one step further and he said, by the way, America set the precedent for using nuclear weapons in World War II. And Putin is absolutely correct about that. The United States is the only country in the world that has ever deployed nuclear weapons in war. And those nukes, by the way, which struck Hiroshima and Nagasaki, those were civilian targets, not military targets, civilian targets. I mean, those were crimes against humanity, folks. It took me even a long time to come to realize that the United States used nuclear or atomic weapons at the time. It's called an atomic bomb. They were relatively low yield compared to today's weapons. But they use atomic weapons against civilian targets. They blew up cities of people who weren't even soldiers. So people out there are saying, well, why do you think America blew up the Nord Stream pipeline? Why would you say America would attack civilian targets? They did it in 1945. I mean, they did it twice. America set the precedent. And so what Putin is saying today is that America set the precedent for using nuclear weapons against civilian targets to win a war. And the fact that Putin is saying that should have everybody on red alert, frankly, high alert, because if Putin does what the United States did in World War II, then that would mean that Russia is going to launch nuclear weapons against Berlin and Paris and London and maybe Warsaw. I don't know what other major cities in Europe. And then Putin's going to invoke the same logic that the United States invoked in World War II. Well, we had to do that to get them to surrender. Otherwise, it was an existential threat against, you know, the Allies. So it's the same argument now from Russia's point of view. It's the exact same argument. Saying, well, NATO is an existential threat to Russia. NATO won't back off. They keep expanding. They violated all their previous agreements. Now they're trying to get Ukraine to join NATO, by the way. I think didn't Ukraine just put in an emergency application to join? Is it NATO that they want to join? I think so. I'd have to double check that. But I think that's what's happening. So that would extend the reach of NATO all the way to the disputed four territories now, Luhansk and Donetsk and the other two. And folks, you're talking about this is a preamble to World War III. If there was a clock of how late it is, you know, like 1 minute to midnight would be bad, then we're like 11:59 and 59 seconds. This is 1 second away from midnight, you know, 1 second away from global nuclear war. And yet if you go around and just talk to regular people, maybe some of your own family members or friends or whoever, coworkers, you talk to them, the average person has never heard of Nord Stream 1 or 2. They would be like the White House spokesperson. Is that Nordstrom's? Is that the place at the mall? Is that where you buy purses? Nordstrom's? No, Nord Stream. You moron. You need to know about this since it's going to cause mass global famine. You might want to learn about the pipelines and what just happened and how it just set off World War III. But, you know, the average person is like, I'm busy. I got to order another Starbucks or whatever. Okay. Good luck. Hope that Starbucks keeps you alive. You're probably going to starve to death, but whatever. Maybe it should be called Starvebucks. Yeah, get yourself a get yourself a giant starvation latte at Starbucks. But people don't understand the dynamic of what's happening here. It's like this. Even if we avert nuclear war, we're still going to have global famine, mass starvation. You see? That's already done. Because of the explosion, the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipeline, and probably BASIF is going to shut down maybe early next year or even before the end of this year. The supply chain is going to collapse. You know, fertilizer has been extremely disrupted. It's mass famine is already baked in. And as if that's not enough, then we might be facing nuclear war on top of that. And then, of course, financial collapse. I assume you saw what happened with the Bank of England over the last couple of days. The Bank of England is in desperate bailout mode. They've had to declare that they're going to buy everything, every bond, every debt instrument, everything in sight. They're going to bail out every pension fund. Why? Well, because it's all collapsing. Basically, bank runs on the Bank of England through the pension funds. There's not enough money in the system because all the bets on debt are unraveling. And so, yeah, you're having a cascading financial collapse scenario, kind of a Lehman Brothers moment in the Bank of England right now. And again, not a lot of people know that. So start thinking about the convergence of black swans here. If you have global famine, massive food scarcity, and then on top of that, you have nuclear war with Russia. And then on top of that, you have bank failures and then currency failures. And then you have civil unrest, mass uprising, people starving to death, people freezing to death, industrial shutdown, mass unemployment, and then supply chain collapse of all the components and chemicals and circuit boards that keeps humanity alive, including agriculture supply chains and so on. That's what we're talking about here. Now, in my interview with Michael Young, I asked him at the end, I said, hey, is there, you know, what can people do? What are the solutions? And he said, well, the good news is that we all come from a long line of people, ancestors who survived plagues and droughts and famines and pestilence and war and so on. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. So our ancestors are survivors. We've got that lineage built in. You know, it's part of our souls, you could say. It's part of who we are. We are survivors. And so he says this is survivable for those who prepare. Probably not survivable for those who don't. That's the difference. So there's going to be a very clear delineation here between the living and the dead, or the soon to be dead. And that is whether you're a prepper. If you're a prepper, you're going to make it. If you're not a prepper, probably going to die. And what I find interesting about this is that preppers tend to be people who did not take the vaccine, whereas non-preppers tend to be people who were vaccinated multiple times. Isn't that an interesting correlation? So the people who are going to die from lack of preparedness may also die from taking too many vaccine shots. It's as if they want to die. They signed up to commit vaccine suicide, usually, again, with multiple injections, because a lot of people took one shot and said, oh, that's enough. No more. Not going to do that anymore. And those people will tend to be survivors, by the way. And a lot of people will survive just fine after taking one shot or even in some cases, two, but it's the people who keep taking three, four, five, on and on. It's just a suicide. It's a suicide cult, right? But then those are also the non-preppers who won't have food. They won't have emergency medicine. They won't have backup money. They won't have gold or silver. They won't have even an AR-15, for that matter. And if they do, they won't have any ammo for it. It's like, I've got one box of ammo. Is that enough? One box? Are you talking like 50 rounds? It's not even enough to load two magazines. What do you have in mind? How do you think this is going to go? That you only need two magazines or less than two. You know, I tell people 50 rounds. No, you need 50 boxes. I mean, you need that. What would that be? 2,500 rounds? That's a start. Now, what's interesting, what Michael Yan told me is that there are a lot of last-minute preppers all across Europe. They're clear-cutting the forests right now for firewood. Yeah, they're cutting down trees right now all across Germany, he said. He drove through Germany. And, I mean, just recently, last week. And he said he couldn't believe it. all these areas that used to be green forest, they're all just being cut down. So the people of Germany, realizing they won't have natural gas, they won't be able to afford electricity, they're going to have to heat their homes with, you know, wood. And so they're out cutting trees now to burn this winter. And I bet you most of them don't even know that green trees don't burn very well. You need like a year for the wood to dry out just to be more burnable. I mean, you cut trees now, you try to burn them 2 months later, good luck. You're not going to get much, you know, heat efficiency out of that, because a lot of the heat's going to go into cooking off all the water in the wood. So you need to be, you need to burn wood from last year's tree cuttings, frankly. That's, or maybe 2 years ago. A lot of people don't know these things. But hey, I guess it's better than nothing. They're trying to survive. They're trying to find some kind of heat source. So there's a bunch of people becoming preppers. And that's what's interesting here. This event, this global genocide, this attack on human civilization, it's going to turn billions of people either into preppers or corpses. At the end of this, believe me, there's only going to be two categories. You're either a prepper or you're a corpse. Because there's nobody that's going to be left alive who didn't have some degree of prepping. And that's the big lesson in all of this. Getting prepared is equivalent to saving your own life. Not being prepared is equivalent to a suicide mission. There's no other way to state it. And preparedness is about more than just having food, as you well know. It's also about financial preparedness, you know, having a backup money system, gold and silver, become your own central bank. It's about having backup medicine, backup communications, backup systems for staying cool or for heating your home or all these things. And, you know, I've got the free downloadable audiobook on this whole thing. It's called resilientprepping.com. If you want to download it, you know, I cover all this. You've got to have backup systems for everything, or, you know, you're going to really be hurting through this whole process. But you've also got to have the ability to defend your systems. And this is the part that a lot of people have trouble with. They don't want to have to learn how to use a rifle. They don't want to have to get body armor. They don't want to have to defend themselves or have to shoot somebody if they're a looter or a violent attacker. They can't. A lot of people, you know, because they're kind, compassionate people, they can't imagine themselves engaging in these kinds of activities of self-defense. And that's a mindset that is going to get a lot of people killed. If you're not willing to defend your supplies that are keeping you alive, then there's a risk that you can be overrun by those who are far more desperate and more willing to carry out acts of violence against you in order to get your stuff, you see. So my attitude is, and my philosophy is, I'm going to help as many people as I can because I am compassionate. I am a humanitarian. I'm going to help with food donations, and I'm going to help with emergency medical supplies. I've already talked about that many times. I've been stockpiling, in some cases, kind of insane levels of things because I intend to distribute them to the community. At the same time, my attitude is also that I have zero tolerance for looters. I have zero tolerance for violence. Anybody that's going to try to rob others, okay, maybe I don't have to say it so directly, but I believe in self-defense, and I'm not going to call 911 in the middle of a collapse and try to find out if there's any police that are going to show up. No. If there's some violent lunatic looter or criminal or, I don't know, whatever, arsonist, and they're threatening innocent people or threatening me, we're just going to deal with that issue right there in that moment without hesitation. And if you don't have that attitude, maybe that's something you could work on. It's an interesting balancing act because, you know, you want to save lives. You want to help people heal. You want to end human suffering. You know, you're a good person. You want peace and abundance and freedom for everybody. And yet sometimes you have to deal with very toxic, dark elements in society. So just be prepared to walk that balance as society collapses. These are survival philosophies that you're going to need to make it through. And just something to think about, okay? Thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, naturalnews.com, and also brighteon.com. Take care.